It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 264. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we got more Bryce Harper stuff. We'll have some audio from the Harper News Conference on Saturday afternoon down in Clearwater. He had a lot of interesting things to say, including why he decided not to go with number 34 and some conversations with a certain Philadelphia native who plays all the way across the other side of the country. We'll get into all that here in just a sec. One key member of the starting rotation that could make a big difference in the Phillies being a contender for the National League East and being a team that struggles for much of the season. We'll ask the question, do the Phillies just have the best offseason in Major League Baseball history, and some other stuff as the team plays down in Clearwater with some spring training games now under the belt. And joining me, as they do every Sunday night here on the podcast, is Justin Clue, the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue, and Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, buddy, it's been a couple of days since the Bryce Harper news broke. We got to hear him speak. How are you feeling now on Sunday night, now that this is all finally starting to become a normal part of our lives?
Well, I got to tell you, we are a couple of days into the Bryce Harper contract, and that means we're down to just over 4,700 days left of the Bryce Harper contract in Philadelphia. And I got to tell you, I miss him already, frankly.
Just, yeah, picturing that he will soon be gone.
It's like he's already gone, basically.
Understood. And Liz, you know, you watched Bryce Harper, you heard him say his words, you saw him in the jersey. It had to give you all the feels, I would think.
It gave me lots of feelings. It's still unbelievable. It's still really strange. We've watched him be on the Nationals for years. I don't think it's really going to sink in until he's, you know, opening day in a Phillies uniform, playing on a field in a game that matters. But until then, I'm going to watch that press conference over and over and over again, because it was delightful. Aside, I would like to say, for the aesthetics, because I don't know who decided to put it in an empty stadium with everyone facing the sun during a spring training game when 95% of the players couldn't be there to watch it.
I will say, I think maybe one of the reasons they did that is I don't know if you're how familiar you are with where they normally stage news conferences down in Clearwater, but they usually stage the news conferences, I believe, in like the cafeteria, and they have to put a sheet that says Phillies all over it, Phillies.com or whatever, in the background, and it kind of looks like the floor is like red and white checkers. It looks like you're going into a barber shop to kind of go eat, and so I think they wanted to have a backdrop that was a little bit classier than that, but they didn't really have a whole lot of other spaces there. Maybe that's something they should invest in, as a nice press room to hold news conferences down in Clearwater, because every time down in the spring, whenever Gabe Kapler has his pre-spring news conference and all that, it's generally speaking, I believe you can actually hear the clinging and the clanging of the chefs in the back getting ready to make steak sandwiches.
Well, we've heard a lot about those team chefs, and we know damn well how much the Phillies have spent on them, so I think we deserve to get a peek behind the curtain there. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, before we jump into the Bryce Harper news conference and talk a little bit more about what he had to say, for all of you, I get the feeling we've got some new listeners to the podcast based on episode 263.
Hello.
And some of the numbers that came in. Yes, welcome aboard. To anybody new to the Good Fight podcast feed and to this podcast in particular, Hittin' Season, welcome aboard. We've been doing this since 2015. So we have been through some pretty sad times here. So that's why episode 263, we were all so elated, because we've been waiting for this for so long. But as part of the Good Fight podcast feed, you get this version of Hittin' Season, in which Liz, Justin, and I chat about the news that's been going on during the course of the week with the Phils and around baseball. And I do a solo pod, a solo version of Hittin' Season, where I'll interview a newsmaker or somebody from the team in the middle of the week. Justin and Liz have their own show called Continued Success, which you can also hear in the middle of the week. Awesome stuff there. And then Every other week, Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk bring you The Dirty Inning, which was rated by the Philly Voice as one of the best podcasts, the best Philly sports podcasts of 2018. So you're going to want to make sure that you check out that podcast. You get all of that as on right here on the Good Fight podcast feed. So if you are new and you have subscribed, you'll be getting all those podcasts every week. And if you haven't subscribed, hit that little button on your phone so you can get everything that we have to offer here on the Good Fight podcast feed. And for Hitting Season here, we on Sunday night, we get together and we chat about the usually, generally speaking, during the regular season, the weekend's games. And right now, we don't really have a whole lot of game action to talk about. I mean, they are playing some exhibition games, but with life going on, I'm not sure how much any of us are actually watching, but Jake Arrieta pitched here on Sunday, and we're going to get into him just in a few minutes because he had some interesting things to say. But before we move on to Bryce Harper, Justin, Liz, anything you guys want to say to any new listeners that might be here? Any warnings or just letting everybody know exactly what to expect?
You know, we had a recommendation from a potentially rabid commenter that the Dirty Inning should maybe not be about the worst innings in Philly's history, which it's not anymore.
No, it's really not.
It's about the most forgotten and obscure or dumb or hilarious innings that we can find in Philly's history. Sometimes we focus on a particular player or but mostly it's just around a particular moment. But this person suggested it should be about the best moments in Philly's history. And I just want to take a second to say the reason it's not about the best moments in Philly's history is because you know all of the best moments in Philly's history. You can list them yourself. You probably have a personal list of all your favorite moments. I have one. John and Liz both have one, and you know them very well. And our whole point is on the Dirty Inning is to bring you Phillies moments from deep in the past or even just a couple of years ago that you may have forgotten and reminisce and inform and just kind of tell you those sort of stories. So I also want to say that we have plenty of bonus content that goes up on our Hitting Season Patreon as well.
Yeah.
Featuring for just like $5, you can get plenty more content. Like Liz and I are reviewing trashy romance novels about baseball.
That's great.
And
so great.
Terrible baseball movies on a monthly basis. And Trevor and I talk about extra stuff from our most recent episodes of The Dirty Inning. So it's just $5 and you get plenty more Phillies talk. So I think that's worth it.
Yeah, it's at patreon.com/hittingseason. And during the regular season, I also put together every couple weeks or so a This Week in Phillies History podcast. And generally speaking, I'll do like a preview podcast, shorter podcast, previewing the next series the Phillies are playing. And so we're all jumping into the fray on the Patreon. Justin, you're right. Patreon.com/hittingseason to do that. Liz, anything you want to say to anybody? Any of the new kids joining the class?
Well, last year on Continued Success, we went through the seasons of the 1993 and 2008 Phillies. Those are sort of evergreen. You could go back and listen to those if you're looking for Phillies content. This year on Continued Success, I believe we're going to do some 2009 stuff. I don't see why we wouldn't.
Nice.
I feel like I've forgotten so much that happened in 2009. I think, Liz, you wrote once that we remember 2008 so fondly. And I remember the 2009 World Series, but just moment to moment that season, I don't think I have as strong a memory on. So I think we'll be shining a light on some stuff that has slipped through the cracks, I think, or just reminding ourselves and our listeners what exactly went on in 2009.
Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, Pedro.
Let us never forget. Like, this is the season that allows us to claim Pedro, some small part of Pedro Martinez as our own. Not a lot of teams get to do that. We're lucky.
No. Yeah, that's cool. So we'll be looking for that. And walking down memory lane for me, too, because you're right. The 2009 regular season kind of just we were all celebrating 2008 so much, but there was some great stuff. The Cliff Lee midseason trade in 2009. That'll be a lot of fun to reminisce about. All right, well, let's jump in here to the Bryce Harper news conference because there's a lot of stuff to get to. Bryce talked first about it being why he decided to come to Philadelphia, talked about it being a family decision, talking about wanting to set down roots here in Philadelphia.
It's a family decision for me. It's where I felt comfortable throughout the whole process. You know, I talked to my wife, I talked to my mom, my dad, and, you know, we all made a decision to, you know, do the things we could to, you know, get back to Philly or get back to anywhere I was going, and really sit down and see where I was going to be happy, where our family would be happy for a long period of time. If that was in DC, if that was LA or Philly or wherever, it was where, you know, where I felt like we could win, where we could build a family and do the things that we could to, you know, have a great career for the rest of time, I guess you could say.
Bryce also said that he was proud to put on the Phillies uniform, contrary to what you heard during the course of the offseason.
I'm very happy, very proud to be able to put this uniform on, and I can't wait to get on the field and do Philly Nation proud, and do everything I can to bring love to the city and do the things I can to, you know, help in the community and bring that family-oriented thing to the clubhouse and be part of that group.
Bryce talked about why he wanted no opt-out in this deal.
I actually, at the beginning of the process, told him I didn't want one wherever I went. You know, I wanted to be able to dig my roots somewhere, and that was through the good, through the bad, through the ups and downs of a team, of an organization. You know, it's going to be tough for 13 years to win every single year, and I totally understand that.
Harper said it was good to feel the love from the Phils and the city.
This process has definitely been a long one, but it's been a lot of fun as well. It's good to feel wanted. You know, it's good to feel wanted by the Phillies organization, by the fan base, by the city as well.
One other thing, a couple other things Bryce talked about, and this is what we want to talk a little bit about here over the next couple of minutes. We were talking on the last podcast, Justin, about what number Bryce would wear, because obviously he's always worn number 34, and 34 was worn by the great Roy Halladay during his time here in Philadelphia. And we were wondering, would the Phillies ask him to kind of keep that number on the shelf? Would they ask him to take a different number? And the reason Bryce Harper's worn number 34 is because those numbers add up to 7, which is the number of his hero Mickey Mantle growing up. And so would he wear 34, or would the Phillies ask him not to do that? Come to find out that he decided on his own that he did not want to wear that number.
Of course, I wore 34, but I thought Roy Halladay should be the last one to wear it. You know, he's somebody in this game that, you know, is greater than a lot of guys that have ever played it. A Hall of Famer, somebody that played the game the right way, was a great person, and was one of the nicest people I've ever met, being able to play across from him in 2012. So, you know, for me, it's Roy Halladay. You know, he's 34. He's what represents that number in Philly. And, you know, when you go in there, you see his name on that flagpole in center field. And, you know, it's something that he should be remembered for. You know, Mikel Franco, he wore 7. And he's a teammate of mine. You know, he's somebody that I didn't want to ask for the number. I didn't feel right doing that. I don't know if that has any significance to him being number 7, but I didn't want to find out. You know, he's number 7 on the Phillies, and he should be able to wear that number every single day.
So, Justin, what is your reaction? Obviously, it's great that he decided that he didn't want to do that, but I also think it's great that he also had the foresight and the forethought not to ask Mikel Franco for his number 7, knowing that Franco's been here for a while. I thought, as much as having reverence for Roy Halladay, having the consideration not to ask your brand new teammate, who you don't know, to give up his number, also showed some really good self-awareness by Harper, and I love that. That was as much as anything else that he said on Saturday afternoon. I really gravitated towards that. I thought that was terrific.
This was such a D-level subplot of this whole situation for me. I mean, it's not that I don't consider it. I agree with you, but at the same time, there was plenty of people looking to vilify him preemptively about what number he was going to wear, or what reverence he was going to show Roy Halladay, or whether Roy Halladay's number should even be retired because he was here for such a short amount of time. It was quickly spiraling out of control, as things tend to do around here. But I honestly, yeah, it's just like, once again, we've seen a version of Bryce Harper that was preceded by a bunch of assumptions, just like when he came up into the league and we thought there was going to be this, like, this immature tantrum throwing little boy wearing eye black in weird places, who was going to be drawing lines in the dust by the batter's box and getting into shouting matches with umpires. And you know, good thing we had Cole Hamels to put a baseball in his spine just to calm him down. So, you know, and what did we get? We got like one of the most pretty reasonable young stars in baseball. Like he hasn't really, you know, I'm sure he's gotten tossed a couple of times. He's gotten in a few arguments. He's had moments of intensity.
He got strangled by Jonathan Papelbon.
But for God's sake.
That's right.
Now there is no excuse for us to ever forget or fail to mention it ever again, because now we get to forever.
He wasn't going to come in here and, you know, pee all over all the lockers and steal somebody's number and just give the finger to the cameras. And that was the press conference. Like, we really shouldn't be surprised at the level of maturity he showed during this process at all.
He's like, not just, man, not, you know,
yeah, not just with player numbers. Like, I know that for a lot of players, this is it's a bigger deal than just it's just a number. You know, there's plenty of guys who like buy somebody an expensive watch or take a guy out to dinner if they want to have his number. They do a trade like that. So it's on some level of importance, obviously. But at the same time, it's no surprise that that he wound up being as rational about it as we saw him be. So, you know, this is Bryce Harper. This is the version of him. This is who the Phillies signed. This is part of the reason they signed him, was because he's not because when someone was being strangled in the Nationals dugout, it was not Bryce Harper doing the strangling. It was Bryce Harper being strangled.
Right. He was not the strangler. He was the stranglee, and I think that's an important distinction. Liz, yeah, I mean, he said he wanted to wear number 3, and that it was a special number for him because his father and his brother both wore number 3 in high school. So obviously, that number 3 has some significance to him, and I kind of like it too in that it signifies like a fresh start. You know, you got a fresh, and I'm not a big number guy. I couldn't tell you what half the Phillies' numbers are. I really couldn't. Like, I'm the same way with all sports teams. Like, there are certain iconic numbers I'll always know, but for the most part, gun to my head, I could not tell you what Rhys Hoskins' number is right now. Just couldn't. Good. I'm glad somebody knows, because I don't know. That's not something that I've invested a lot of my brain power in. But numbers are really important to athletes, and to give up 34, and even to give up number 7, a number that, you know, I think he would have liked to have, and probably would have chosen if Michael Franco didn't have it. I think shows a lot of maturity. What did you think?
I thought it was nice. It showed that he didn't think he was above anybody else. You know, he's just a guy coming onto the team, just like anybody else would. You know, it reflects all of the things that he said about wanting to come and build and become part of a family. You know, it's touching, all of that stuff. I personally super duper like it. So I also enjoyed during the press conference that when he started talking about his, you know, his dad wore it, his brother wore it. He said, my wife likes the number 3. And then she spent the next 5 minutes looking, you know, next to her, waving her hand because she had absolutely no idea what he was talking about. I really enjoyed that. I'm just like, because it's either something she does unconsciously, or she said something about it was liking even numbers.
My wife likes even numbers.
She's like, I have no idea what he's talking about. And so it's either something that he's noticed that she does subconsciously, or she, you know, he's making it up. Either way, I find it amusing.
It kind of reminds me when my wife and I were first dating, she would always have to have her silverware lined up before we'd start eating. And every now and then when she'd turn her head, I'd just move the fork slightly, you know, just pull it back or push it forward a little bit. And I'd wait to see how long it would take her before she would move the fork back or move the knife back. And generally speaking, it wasn't long. It was like 10 or 15 seconds. And I'd do it a couple times before she caught on, but it was just kind of a fun way to kind of, you know, tweak your significant other. And it was all in fun.
A wild and raucous courtship of a...
Yeah. It got crazy. You have no idea. Anyway, Bryce Harper's number 3, his Phillies number 3, broke the record for the best 24 hours of sales for a jersey launch for any player in any sport. That is crazy. You talk.
How
people think baseball.
Phillies fans, we are thirsty.
Really thirsty.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah, according to Fanatics, Bryce Harper broke the record for the best 24 hours of sales for a jersey launch for any player in any sport. So yeah, Phillies fans are really thirsty for these jerseys. From Saturday afternoon to Sunday afternoon, sales of Phil's merchandise was up more than 5,000% from the same day last year, which I haven't taken a lot of marketing classes.
Seems high.
Right. It seems high. Like Andy McPhail, I had to be told that that's a good number. So I think...
Andy McPhail had a separate press conference to announce that 5,000% was a large number and that the Phillies are doing very well. So thank you.
From what he's been told. From what he's been told, yes.
I could not have been more thrilled that he did not participate in this press conference.
Do you think he knows the Phillies signed Bryce Harper yet? He's
I'm guessing he has an idea. Yeah, I would imagine.
I'm not sure.
But it's a fair question. It's a fair question. One last piece of sound I want to play from the news conference. Harper raised a lot of eyebrows when he talked about the fact that he had spoken to Mike Trout basically throughout this process starting in November because he wanted to get a sense from somebody who grew up in the Philadelphia area. And again, remembering Mike Trout grew up about 45 minutes away from the Philadelphia area in Jersey. But Philadelphia sports, Philadelphia was the city that he most identified with. And he still, obviously, we know how big a Philly sports fan Mike Trout is. But that Harper talked to him a lot during the course of the offseason about Philadelphia. And then threw this little nugget in at us to let us know that, you know, one of the reasons he signed here and signed for the deal that he did at just over $25 million a year is to add other players. And we all know who he was talking about. So, Liz, it sounds to me like Harper is fishing for Trout.
Shut up.
No,
shut
I had to do
up.
It. I had to do it. I had to do it. I had to do it. But, you know, that's the thing is there seems to be a window here. I don't even want to go there in my mind yet. I want to enjoy these next couple of years with the team as it's currently constructed.
And
as I know that as a city, I know that that's not possible. But what do you think about this about Harper talking to Trout all offseason long?
I'm sorry. No, I'm jumping in real quick.
Justin's going first. All right. Go ahead.
No, I'm just commenting on what you just said, which is that you're not going to be able to appreciate this team as it's currently constructed because Bryce Harper mentioned Mike Trout.
No, I said I want to be able to appreciate this team as currently constructed. I want to spend the next 2 years not talking about Harper and Trout together. But that being said, what do you guys think about Harper and Trout being together?
All right. Let's back up. What I was talking about is that the city, no one's going to be able to stop talking about this. There's just no way. Like, this is what's going to be talked about now whenever anybody needs a topic, because the last thing that we used to do that with is gone now because he's on the team. We used to talk, you know, everyone's topic is where would Bryce Harper land in however many years? Now that person is Mike Trout. And
Mike Trout is every 50 or 60 year old columnist in this city's very good son. And they're just begging him to come home. And we've seen it so much over the past couple of years. We saw it for a couple of weeks during this off season when that became the trend, when it was like, you know what? We don't need Bryce Harper. We're just going to wait and get Mike Trout. And now it's hilarious because maybe the best reason for Phillies fans to think they'll get Mike Trout is because Bryce Harper is here.
I mean, I love that they're talking. I love that he wanted advice on Philadelphia. I love that, you know, he wants to recruit players to come play here. I love it. I love it all. I can't lie and say that I don't. You know, at this point, all I think I could do is lean into this and enjoy the speculation, because Mike Trout is the best player in baseball and he might want to come here. And that is an embarrassment of riches that no one fan base deserves.
It makes me feel dirty to think.
And so I want to enjoy, I want to come to this from like a perspective of joy, because if I get too serious about it, it's really just tempting fate for me, you know, for the faith to be like, oh, well then you get nothing forever. So I want to enjoy that the best player in baseball might come here. Like
for me, it's just overwhelming. I'm still easing myself into looking at images of Bryce Harper wearing Phillies attire, let alone thinking about him playing in the same outfield as Mike Trout.
He can't even say the name. He can't even say the full name. It's unbelievable. No, I, you know what though? I hear you guys. Like, I even feel a little bit guilty wondering if the Phillies will go after Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell. You know, like how much more can we get? It does. I don't feel guilty, but I do kind of feel like, all right, how much is too much? You know, how much can we buy here? Like before it starts,
we can
to,
buy anything the, we want. First off,
and that's
if
the case.
The Yankees
yeah.
and Red Sox exist. The Yankees traded for Giancarlo Stanton last year. They already have an obscene number of good players and pitchers. Like they have a lot, and they got fortunate that they were able to grow it. The Phillies weren't that lucky. It's the roll of the dice. It happens to every team. And so if the Phillies have the money to buy what they want, I'm all for it. Who cares if they didn't start here? Who cares?
Yeah. No, I hear you. No, I'm with you on that.
My thing is that, and this is for any sport really, is that just like the top seed, it feels like that's never the guarantee people think it is. And I feel like in baseball, we've seen so many times teams outfitting themselves really well at like the deadline or like being ranked the highest for the off season or at the trade deadline for like doing the best and getting the players they needed or getting the best players available. And then those teams proceed to like, whoops, there was a bad hop and you lost 3 games out of 5 before you could bat an eye and you're gone. Now, as I was thinking about saying this, I was also thinking the Red Sox were the best team in baseball last year. Is that even an argument, right?
And no, they
spent a lot of money.
They went ahead and won a World Series. So, you know, this argument is moot now.
The GM said spending money helps you win. That's why he did it.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's especially been the case. You have the outliers, like teams like the Royals who pop up and win a title. But for the most part, the teams that win championships are the teams that win money. And
also,
the Phillies,
we're past the point already. Like the Phillies signed Bryce Harper. They traded for JT Realmuto.
Right.
Like, you know, we're past that point. Signing Dallas Keuchel isn't going to be too much. Like they signed a guy to a 13-year deal this season.
Yeah, I didn't really mean that. Baseball. I didn't really mean that I would feel guilty if they signed Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell. I'm all for it.
All right,
I'm
the ground ball pitcher's too much. I'm out. This is way too, I can't handle this. All right.
That's right. So real quick, before we hit our break, the Angels have reportedly offered Trout a contract extension of 10 years, $350 million. So I guess, you know, obviously this is the start of a negotiation with those guys, but what do you think the number has to be for him to say yes?
Well, one thing I want to say is he's not negotiating until next offseason.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he needs to see how this season goes. I think he wants to win a World Series. If the Angels are a potential playoff team this year or get to the playoffs, I think extension talks become a lot more real. But, I mean, 10 years, 350, even as a starting off point, is kind of ridiculous. That number's got to have a 4 at the front of it, 10 years, 4, whatever. But I agree. Justin, I don't think Trout is signing anything until he knows what it is the Angels have this year. And I don't think they have enough to be competitive in the American League West.
It just kind of reminds you of how criminally poor the Angels have been despite having the best player in baseball for so long. He really is just kind of a shadow out there. That you, it's not that you forget about him, but like as East Coast baseball fans, where a lot of big market teams exist, you know, we're asleep by the time the games Mike Trout is playing in end.
Yeah.
And to that extent, yeah, he's put together, he's been an all-star in every season he's been a Major League Baseball player, except the first one when he was 19 years old. 19
oh
years old. He's been in the league for 8 years. He's been an MVP twice. He was the rookie of the year. He finished second in MVP voting 4 times. Wow. He led the league in so many categories so many times. I don't need to cite that. And like different categories too, from like walks and runs scored to stolen bases and RBI and slugging and on base and like everything. So like why this guy has played, when you like scroll down his baseball reference page and you see one lonely line of postseason batting in 2014 in the ALDS versus the Royals. When he was 22 years old, he went 1-for-3. He had a home run, of course, and he had 3 walks, of course.
Yeah.
That is just the criminal part of this, that in the better part of a decade, the Angels haven't managed to put together a team around the best player in baseball to give him any sort of, even just a deep playoff run, even just that. I mean, even just a deep playoff run to point at and be like, look, Mike, look, we got close a couple of times. Luck of the draw, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is a cycle. Baseball is a fickle sport. Yeah, no, it's all true. There's just nothing for them to point at. And I don't know, like, I'm not aware of how many regime changes front office wise the Angels have gone through off the top of my head. But at the same time, man, you got to start seeing like, if I'm Mike Trout, you got to start seeing like real credible, dramatic proof or changes that this is a franchise that's ready to treat you on the field the way you're ready to be treated, let alone how much you're going to be paid. Because, you know, we're not saying he's not a spring chicken anymore, but he's 26. He's 26 years old. You know, that's older than he was 8 years ago when he started playing in professional, in Major League Baseball. So yeah, I think you definitely need somebody to sit you down and be like, all right, look, we're going to make some big moves here. But you know, this offseason, that team was the Phillies. The Phillies made all the big moves essentially in Major League Baseball this year. So, you know, hey, We've spent a long time laughing at people who said, oh, you got to wait for Trout. Maybe, you know, the Phillies signed Mike Trout. Just in this moment, in this snapshot in time, the Phillies would be a very appealing team for Mike Trout to go to. So the Angels had better do some kind of very dramatic overhauling to guarantee that Mike Trout could at least be given the opportunity to be as deep in the postseason as he and baseball fans deserve to see him play.
Hey, they signed Matt Harvey.
Oh, God, they did.
Is that where he is? They did. I saw him. I saw a headline with him saying, like, I'm ready for a fresh start or whatever. And I was like, where the hell are you, Matt Harvey?
All right, well, up next when we come back, a real quick look at the negotiations as they went down, and talk about the pivotal role that Jason Wirth had in encouraging Harper to embrace Philadelphia. That's up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So a lot of us were talking about why this offseason took so long to develop, why Bryce Harper took so long to sign. Would it surprise you guys to know that the Phillies didn't actually make their first contract offer to Bryce Harper until last Sunday? Last Sunday was the first, and this was reported by Jim Salisbury, the Phillies did not make an exact contract offer to Bryce Harper until last Sunday, and then the deal was finalized 4 days later, which makes me think, two things. One, if Manny Machado wasn't a part of this, I wonder if the Phillies would have been more aggressive earlier in the offseason, and that the reason why everything kind of they didn't make an official offer to Harper was they were just kind of waiting to see how Machado played out. But, you know, Jim Salisbury reported that Harper initially wanted a 15-year deal that would have taken him to age 40, and that the Phillies were offering $330 million with their first offer on Sunday. And Boris and company liked the $330 million, but over 15 years, the AAV wasn't enough. So they kept talking, and then the Dodgers and Giants got in the mix. The Phillies then reached out. The Phillies actually offered a Dodgers-like short-term deal, a 3-year deal with an AAV of around $40 million a season. That was rejected by Boris and Harper. The Phillies then suggested a 6 or a 7-year deal at about $35 million a year once the Giants started to get serious. Then rumors started coming in that the Giants went to 10 years and $300 million, and the Phillies offered 14 years. Boris said no. The Phillies were discouraged. They thought the deal was over at that point. But since the Phillies were the only team at 330, the only team that was willing to go past the Giancarlo Stanton mark, they asked the Phillies if they'd be willing to do 13 years, putting the AAV at just over the Stanton number, just over $25 million. The Phillies said yes. Done deal. Are you guys surprised? Liz, are you surprised that the Phillies didn't actually make their first contract offer until last Sunday? I was floored by that.
It makes me want to go back in time and tell myself that information really badly.
Yeah, we would have saved ourselves a lot of trouble. I did that whole retrospective on how social media covered Harper. 98% of that was useless, essentially.
All of the time, the agita, the debating. Like, it's what the offseason's about. Rumors come out, but it's just, wow. Like, and that he didn't have, like, the Phillies hadn't made him one until then is really, I mean, you know, in a vacuum, you need something to fill the void. And it was more likely that they had made an offer than hadn't, I think. So I can't believe it. Really, it's insane. Yeah. It makes me feel kind of angry.
Like, Justin, we were just kind of all going along on this roller coaster ride, wondering, you know, how many times did we ask on this podcast, we don't even know if the Phillies have made Harper an offer. The Phillies won't say whether or not they've made Harper an offer. They hadn't made Harper an offer. Even when John Middleton flew out to Las Vegas with his wife, which was it turned out to be a great thing because John Middleton and his wife and Lee were very instrumental in helping Bryce and his wife Kayla feel comfortable about coming to Philadelphia. So that obviously wasn't a wasted trip, but that was the intention of that trip. They apparently never even talked. There was never even a specific contract offer made on that first Middleton flight to Las Vegas, which again just floors me.
I mean, I'm done feeling upset about any part of this process. To me, the ends justify the means, whatever they were. This is why it's best that we all don't know what the whirring blender of a process is in these cases when, like, billionaires are negotiating billion-dollar contracts. We would have been reacting on a week-by-week basis to every part. If we had known all of this, like, we were wondering why, or we were wondering if they had made him an offer. If we knew that they hadn't, or that, like you said, the part that really made my heart skip a beat for a second there, that they just felt like they were out. And we were sitting here like idiots being like, yep, maybe everything's fine. La, 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 la. And meanwhile, the Phillies were like, well, that's it, I guess. Pack it in. That's scary. But I'm glad we didn't have all of this information to react to every week. I'm glad to us it was just sort of an insane mystery slowly driving us insane.
Is that better than the alternative? Is that really?
But Justin, you're right. The ends did justify the means, oh, sure. And the Phillies played it right. At the end of the day, the Phillies played this right. And I get, you know, how much. Well, I'm getting into that in just a second. I want to talk also about the role that Jason Worth had. He was apparently instrumental in encouraging Harper to embrace Philadelphia, which is kind of surprising considering how Worth left Philadelphia. But, you know, Justin, what are your thoughts on the role Worth had? Because he has a complicated history with Phillies fans. I don't think it should be as complicated as it was. I have never liked Philly fans booing Jason Worth, but, you know, at the end of the day, it seems as though Jason Worth just kind of blew that off and did the Phillies a solid.
I don't know if Jason Worth, I mean, clearly he's at this point over whatever malfeasances existed between him and Philadelphia and Phillies fans. Clearly there was a point where that was at its peak. Actually, I went back and I was really curious about this because I was looking into, the general saltiness basically of Phillies fans when Jason Worth signed with the Nationals versus Nationals fans with Bryce Harper signing with the Phillies. And there's a lot of context to this. It's not as simple as like, okay, star player signs somewhere else or signs with divisional rival. Bryce Harper was awarded to the Nationals because of how bad they were. The rules of baseball like handed them the number one pick in the draft and they went with Harper, the obvious choice, watched him fulfill their wildest expectations and reach the peak of the sport with little hesitation. Jason Worth, on the other hand, is almost the opposite of that. He was picked up by the Phillies, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, because Pat Gillick was looking for spare parts and remembered him from the time they were both with the Blue Jays, I think.
That was the Dodgers. Maybe it was the Blue Jays. Yeah, but he was with the Dodgers
right.
when they got
him. Dodgers, but yeah, I think early in his... Yeah. Worth had to prove he could be an everyday player, and he gave Charlie Manuel that famously now that video of proof that he was up for it, and he clawed his way into a job, won the World Series with them. He was just exactly the kind of player people love around here, this key role player on a team that went all the way. He went to the Nationals in a $126 million deal in free agency, which, like, when you go back and remember what his story is, I mean, that had to have been just the wildest fantasy that he had, that he was going to, like, work his way up and then finally get that to that foothold of being offered that insane free agent contract, like from going from like having to convince the manager to give him a starting job to getting paid $126 million in free agency. I mean, that had to be just like the moment for him. So we flash forward to Worth's first time at Citizens Bank Park since signing with the Nationals, and it's 2012, Natitude's in full effect. The Nats had assumed control of the NL East in a reign of dominance that would culminate in the winning of nothing. And everyone was making a big deal out of what exactly was going to happen when Worth came to the plate for the first time in Citizens Bank Park. So based on the lead up to this, you either thought that there would be some polite applause or that Phillies fans were going to harness the power of the sun and just pull it into the stadium to destroy the planet based on how much resentment they had for this guy who signed out of town. We run in some pretty rational baseball circles. I feel like a lot of fans, even just like the craziest fans, knew that Jason Worth signing that deal. We knew he wasn't coming back because, again, this is what he had worked so hard for, and he had already won a World Series in Philadelphia. Like, he can appreciate his time in Philly, not get the deal he wanted from that team, and go somewhere else. Like, those two things can exist simultaneously. At the same time, the general idea of someone leaving Philadelphia, not being grateful enough to the team with which he won the World Series and taking the money to play for a divisional rival, that's like all the information somebody needs to call into sports radio and have an absolute meltdown. So what happened during the game was very much like the giant crowd version of a kid rejecting while hugging a parent they're mad at, like light boos that were drowned out by cheers and the seemingly cranky Worth, who I love Jason Worth. But he's always seemed like a crack. Like, if you did one word adjective exercise with like those Phillies, it was like Jimmy Rollins, smiled. Jane Victorino, psyched. Chase Utley, intense. Ryan Howard, big. And cranky would be the first word that came to mind for Jason Worth. It just would. And that's fine.
Yeah.
So I was surprised that he stepped out of the box and like waved to the fans. It's like, it's traditional, but that he just seemed like he was always waiting to see the worst in Phillies fans. And he's kind of got a little bit of that. But from that point forward, it was pretty much the gloves were off. And Worth was pretty clearly booed over the years. I think just like out of instinct or habit, that lessened as it became clear that the Phillies were nothing and the Nationals were a good team until the playoffs, when they also became nothing. But you just sort of rolled your eyes and like tried to make him into a villain. But for the most part, baseball wasn't really fun enough to mine for emotional narratives in Philadelphia. In the middle of those two things, though, he broke his wrist on a play in front of some Phillies fans. And while he was being taunted, he became furious with them and sent an email to the Washington Post that said, "After walking off the field, feeling nauseous, knowing my wrist was broken, hearing Philly fans yelling, 'You deserve it, and that's what you get,' I am motivated to get back quickly and see to it personally that those people never walk down Broad Street in celebration again." So later he would admit to being in a somewhat more emotional state when he sent that email and speaking hyperbolically when he sent it, but you got the gist. Like, however, it seems that when Harper came to him and to ask about playing in Philly, he talked it up as diplomatically as you'd expect from someone who'd played there and won there, but also been booed there and made fun of there after seriously injuring himself. The point is, we didn't do great. We did fine. And everything we did was viewed through the filter of Philly fan behavior. And Washington media outlets would, of course, jump on anything gleefully to point out how terrible we were. Worth didn't care. He's on record saying, like, "I just don't care what other people think. I'd rather not be interviewed. I'm not going to invite sports writers out for dinner for a profile or anything. Like, that's just not going to happen with me." And that's honestly, I feel like I would lean towards that if I were a professional athlete as well. So there's just some bad, diseased people in this city, and they need very little motivation to consider someone an enemy. Philly Voice wrote in 2016 that Worth is a target every time he returns to Citizens Bank Park. But I would say that about like 2014, 2015, Worth wasn't really viewed even by the general public as anything but a reflexive boo. He wasn't viewed as a Philly who became a National anymore. He was just a Nationals player. So now we have the opposite thing happening with Worth going to the Nats. And that's like, Worth going to the Nats was like having our arm ripped off. Harper coming to the Phillies is like the Nationals getting their heart ripped out. So the response from fans and media in Washington has just been so salty. And we got the Thomas Boswell column in which he got that anonymous veteran to say, "Write it," to a block of copy Boswell came up with citing all of Harper's faults. We got that Neil Greenberg, those two headlines that came out saying like Bryce Harper would be worth $500 million for the Nationals. And then he signs with the Phillies and he says he is not worth $330 million, even though they were separated by a year. It was still, you know, the salt was very, you could taste it. You have Dan Steinberg, who I really like, but he's tickled by the dumbass responses of Phillies fans who were mad about the length of this whole process. And he put together a piece collecting all of the like violent, angry response of terrible Phillies fans and people in like the media. And I get it, but he did that and then played the who me card when like getting negative responses about it. And then John, you tweeted out a collection of salty responses, one from Thomas Boswell talking about how Bryce Harper may sign the least satisfying 9-figure contract in the history of money. He's free yet without choices. He probably can't, quote, go home where he was wanted. He has himself and agent Scott Boris to thank. Yeah, he can thank. I'm sure he's very legitimately thanking them for a 13-year, 300, whatever. But the responses to that were full of very salty people saying he's not worth the money. His batting average is bad. He doesn't hustle. All the stuff you'd expect to hear from Philly people. This deal really turned those people, Washington fans, into Philly fans, the fans they consider themselves so high above. The Nationals themselves, their team account, tweeted out that very passive-aggressive tweet about Juan Soto being the best teenage hitter in MLB history at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Now,
granted, I'm here for the pedo.
Oh, yeah. But like, granted, it's Twitter, social media, all this terrible toilet we spend our days at least ankle deep in. It wasn't as intense of a playground for team accounts or fan reactions, even as late as 2012. And Worth was a good player who went to someone in the Phillies division, but they weren't really rivals until about the time he went there. Harper is the face of baseball, whose Worth suddenly and mysteriously tanked in and around Washington upon the assumption that he would not be returning. And the last thing is Philly is a giant mob of sports fans. Some people are in it all the time. Some people show up when things are good. I'm not saying one way of being a fan is right or wrong. I'm just saying when a Philly team is really like doing it, everybody's pretty much involved, whether they want to be or not. Meanwhile, the only big DC sports fan I've ever met lived and worked in Philadelphia. So I don't want to gloss over a lot of bad, dumb reactions that people had to Jason Worth leaving, but I do feel like the reaction has been stronger, pettier, sillier, and much more obvious among the Washington media and fans. However, I think context is important, and it is different than the Worth deal.
I love how you unpacked all that. And as someone who lives in Northern Virginia and works in Washington, D.C., I am here, you know, and the reaction from Nationals fans is, well, he sucked anyway. That is honest to goodness the reaction I have heard from. He's not, that's a, the Phillies have gotten themselves a horrible deal. He's going to suck for you. He's only going to be good for two or three years. You know, it's way too much money. We didn't want him back anyway. He never won anything for the Nationals. I'm hearing that from coworkers. I'm hearing that from friends. I'm hearing that from people I see in the grocery store whenever I wear a Phillies hat. My oldest son had a birthday party at a bowling alley, and I was wearing a Phillies hat on Saturday. I had some random stranger come up to me and talk about Bryce Harper and say, he sucks anyway. We didn't need him anymore. I mean, listen, the Nationals are still really good. They may not need Bryce Harper. If Victor Robles is good and they've got a great pitching staff, they may still win the division. I mean, the Nationals are a good baseball team, but the whole revisionist history of Bryce Harper, now that he's in Philadelphia, listen, I get it. Because if we were in, if this was happening to Philadelphia, if this, you know, I related this online on Twitter earlier this week when Bryce Harper said something along the lines of coming to Philadelphia, the best sports city in the country. I related that to when Scott Rolen left Philadelphia and called St. Louis baseball heaven. You know, this is their version of Scott Rolen leaving their city and calling some other place the greatest place on earth. We didn't handle that very well. And so I understand why Nationals fans aren't handling all that well, but it is a trip to be here in D.C. and have to kind of be like, well, I'm still pretty happy we got Bryce Harper, guys. I don't know what to tell you. I think I think emotion is playing into your reaction to this a little bit.
Hey, when the Phillies sent, or when the Nationals signed Brad Lidge in 2012, they had him turn around and say, as he said at a Sabre conference, right, that Liz watched me ask him why he said it. He said, the Nationals are probably the most talented team I've been on. And I asked him about that, and he said, they wanted me to say worse things than that, but I said, I still have family living in the Philadelphia area. So wow, clearly that is very much also a marketing thing in the Nationals organization, which is like weird.
It was at the time when they were feeling very inferior.
But they still are. What I said last week. They've still got this.
But that's what I mean. They never won. They never won at all. And they didn't do it. Now they're watching their star leave. They have to say this stuff to sleep at night. And maybe they will be fine without him. But I don't. I think it does make their team worse to not have him. You know?
Yeah, it does.
I do want to say one thing about Jason Worth. I really liked the way he talked about Philadelphia. Philly fans win the best and lose the worst. Because I think with the exception of the Eagles a few months ago, that's been true forever.
Super true.
Yeah. We lose real bad. And I like how he said that because it's very honest and direct, you know? And Harper clearly knows what he's in for. He knows what he's in for.
Harper said he knows he'll get booed at some point. I mean, and I think everybody who, and that was one of the other narratives coming out of the Washington, D.C. reporters, was Harper's too nice a guy to play in Philadelphia. We're going to be too hard on him.
We're going to make Bryce Harper cry. Like, give me a break.
Yeah. I know.
He's a tough competitor. Like, the person he is off the field is different than the person he is on the field. He'll be booed on the field, but. Like, I don't think we've gotten to a point as a city where people are going to boo him as he walks the streets. Like, I don't think we've gotten to that point in our history yet. And so, you know, he's too nice a guy off the field. Like, that doesn't matter. On the field, he will cut you. So
seriously, he will. Well, up next, we're going to talk about some people who are not named Bryce Harper, believe it or not.
Why?
I felt contractually obligated, but we're gonna do it just, you know, for fun and games. We're gonna do it up next here on Hittin' Season. All right, well, let's get into some non Bryce Harper stuff to finish off the podcast here, and I want to look back real quick at everything that's been done this offseason by Matt Klentak. And leading up to the Harper signing, I think we all had been pretty critical of the Phillies front office, even though they had made a bunch of really good moves. They had signed Andrew McCutchen way back during the winter meetings. They had signed David Robertson to bolster the back of the bullpen. They had traded for JT Realmuto, traded Sixto Sanchez and Jorge Alfaro. That's a heavy price. It's a price I think all three of us weren't prepared to pay for JT Realmuto, especially trading Sixto for him. And also trading
I barely remember any of those people anymore.
It's probably best you forget about them until they come to the big leagues. And they traded for Gene Segura. They also signed Aaron Nola to a contract extension. Those moves were all really good, but obviously we're missing something without Harper. Now, with Harper a part of the whole offseason collage, you look at the job that the Phillies did. And Liz, let me start with you. What is your feeling about Matt Klentak right now? Because I really don't think you can look at this season, this offseason, as anything other than an unbelievable success. And there's always the worry that you're going to have a season like that Padres team did a couple of years ago. But I think this Phillies team got so many better players than that Padres team did. It seems impossible for me to believe that the Phillies are going to have a down season after bringing all of this legit talent in that seemed to meet every need that they had.
I mean, we'll be honest, lightning could strike, but Matt Klentak has done everything in his power to put together a good team, to put together a not just a good team, a much improved team. He's done everything. He's done everything I could have possibly wanted him to do. I mean, trading for JT Realmuto didn't seem like a possibility at all because I didn't think the Phillies would pay the price.
Yeah,
I personally didn't really want them to, but I also didn't think they would. if I thought, you know, who knows what that information would have done for me and my thoughts on the trade at the time. I can't say anything other than I'm glad they did it. It turns them into a contender. I think if they had done Real Muto afterwards, we would have really good feelings on that trade too. You know, it seemed like an incomplete puzzle. And with Bryce Harper there, everything feels like it meant something.
Yeah, Justin, that's why the signing of Harper really was important, because when you trade guys like Sixto Sanchez and Jorge Alfaro for JT Realmuto, who's only under contract for 2 years, and the Phillies could sign him to an extension, which I think they will try to do, but that's not a guarantee when you make that trade. They didn't get an exclusive negotiating window, and so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you don't end up getting Bryce Harper. Now that he's here, Realmuto just makes all kinds of sense. And you see what the vision was. You see what the direction was. And pulling off the Harper deal makes the whole offseason an absolute A-plus for Matt Klentak. And so, you know, any thoughts that anybody had of displeasure regarding Klentak? And frankly, I know in our Slack channel, I saw people saying that Klentak never takes any risk. That Realmuto trade was a risk. Trading Sixto Sanchez away for a guy you only have for 2 years, that's a risky deal. And obviously signing Bryce Harper to a 13-year deal with no opt-outs and a no-trade clause, as much of a no-brainer as we thought it is, does carry with it some risk too. I mean, Matt Klentak has done everything you could ever ask a general manager to do. Very Ruben Amaro Jr.-esque.
Oh, yes.
I was going to say, this is for my question, not for Liz's.
This is for you.
And you brought up Ruben Amaro. Okay.
I did bring up, yeah, I know. Yeah. Ruben, I know. Ruben is Liz's guy.
I don't have to answer all of the Ruben questions.
You know. Sure. Right. Just like snuggle the little Ruben Amaro teddy bear with the little glasses that that you have on your lap right now.
I do have a jersey signed
there
by him.
There he is. All right.
There it is.
Yep. Signing Bryce Harper is very, very, very much, I realized, like the lights coming on at a bar at 2 a.m. after you've been like singing and you've got your arms around people you don't know, and then suddenly the lights come on and you're like, oh yeah, okay. Like, we were all very, very mad and frustrated about the Phillies front office, and people would and we said this on here, people would drop in with the occasional like, hey, the Phillies have made a lot of really good moves that you have said are good, and at times have said only good moves this offseason. And yet the prolonging of this process, signing Bryce Harper, has really turned everyone into just screaming trolls about this front office. And if they fail to get him, it will be a failure of an office. It was bizarre. We didn't really know who we were. And then the lights came back on by the Phillies signing Bryce Harper. And then it was just like, oh, right. Okay. We're here. This is like, why am I touching this person? Right. No, this makes sense now. All these moves make sense. I need to go home, and we need to start thinking about what this team is going to look like with Bryce Harper on it for 13 years. I don't know. I think we all kind of fell. We all kind of fell into the same condition, I think, that we were trying to avoid for all the offseason, which is growing so frustrated and bored that we became irritated and cranky with the Phillies front office. Like, they aren't a flawless enterprise by any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, those moves on their own without Bryce Harper being added to them, that would have not been as good. Like, that would have been a good team and a better team from last year. And that's what Andy McPhail would have come out and told us, that like, look, this team improved by 3 wins. What are you so mad about? We would have been mad because the best player available was still available and went somewhere else when the Phillies could have gotten him. So I think we weren't out of line to be frustrated at the idea of the Phillies losing out on Bryce Harper, because as we've said last week, it was very easy to imagine them losing out on him. At the same time, they had done so much good leading up to that point. It's just comical how quickly we forgot and how angry we were and how ready we were for everyone to be fired because this didn't happen. But I mean, at the same time, it tells you how much gravity a move like this has, how much impact signing him was presumed to have, how much it will have and did have, and how much not signing him also would have done. So this was the biggest deal of all these guys' lives. Like, that's why they talk about Matt Klentak furiously working on this deal without showering, probably wearing the same windbreaker he went to bed in. You know, like all those details exist because this is as insane of a deal that exists on insane of a level that makes it so singular. So yeah, I think I don't. We were definitely diseased with irrationality for parts of this, certainly near the end. But at the same time, you know, it would have been a failure for this front office to not sign Bryce Harper, and it would have made the rest of their moves not as good.
I am really glad we didn't have to spend podcast time talking about who should be fired.
Oh, I have several blog posts written in which I am taking the front office to task. And they now just exist in another world where we don't live, and they can just be puffed into ether at this point. There's nothing to it. We don't live there. It's over.
Last thing, they are playing some spring training games right now down in Clearwater. I know most folks probably aren't aware of that with all the Bryce Harper hoopla going on. But in action on Sunday, Jake Arrieta was on the mound. And I think he is a super important part of this team that not a lot of people talk about. Because after Aaron Nola, this team does not have a real number two starter unless Jake Arrieta steps up and has a season like he had in the first half last year, or for certain months last year, or unless we get a Nick Pivetta breakout season this year, which I think, you know, I feel pretty good about. What level is breakout? You know, is it simply a guy who has an ERA in the mid threes with a lot of strikeouts, or is it somebody who it makes an all-star team or something like that? That remains to be seen. But we're talking about Arrieta. He was hitting 94 miles an hour a few times in the outing on Sunday, which at this stage of the season is fantastic. He tossed three perfect innings, had four strikeouts against mostly Twins, the Minnesota Twins regulars. There weren't a whole lot of minor league guys in the lineup when he was in the game. So that, to me, was very encouraging. He made a lot of hitters swing and miss pretty ugly at times on Sunday. And, you know, when you look at Jake Arrieta's numbers, he talked earlier in the offseason about the fact that he had a torn meniscus in his knee and tried to pitch through it, and it was really from that point on that he really struggled. In the first half last year, he had a 3.23 ERA and a 5.04 ERA in the second half of the season. When you break it down by month, his ERA in April was 3.49. In May, it was 0.90. He was terrible in June, though, 6.66 ERA, but bounced back with a good July, 2.80. So three out of the 4 months there, he was pretty good. In August, it jumped to 4.5, and in September, it was 6.39, where you could just tell he was off. And his strikeout rate went up late in the season as his results really cratered. So it was a bizarre season for Jake Arrieta. But Liz, as we're talking about different guys here in 2019, the guys who existed previously before this offseason, to me, Jake Arrieta is, if they can get somebody, he doesn't have to be like his Cy Young self, but if he can be like the guy they had in the first half last year with an improved defense behind him, that can really solidify this starting rotation and keep winning streaks alive, which is something this team really had trouble with over the last 6-7 weeks last year.
Arrieta is hugely important. I mean, they're not gonna go out and get another pitcher. They're gonna ride or die with the guys they have, which is fine, I think. But that makes, you know, Arrieta really important. He's being paid a lot of money, and it would be great if he could produce anything close to what he did early in his you know, first season with the Phillies. I would like that a lot.
Justin, what are your thoughts on Arrieta? What's your confidence level that he'll bounce back? Or do you think this is a team that's going to need to go shopping for a number two starter this year?
I'm at the point where I'm sort of thinking both things. I mean, there's not much more you can say after a guy gives a first spring training performance that's optimal than just like, oh, it's good to see. Because that's, you know, no indication of a long term future event. Because that's all. Like, I almost just said it's just good to see instinctively again after saying I would say good to see. But no, I mean I'm with Liz. I mean, I know some people have said that that some people are focusing too much on the Phillies starting pitching moving into this season. But at the same time, Jake Arrieta is so important because the Phillies have not focused on starting pitching as far as acquisitions go this offseason. We're still left with the same kind of ambiguous back of the rotation that has existed the last couple of years, as in who will be good, who will be ineffective, who will be injured. People are very much on board the Nick Pivetta train, which is great. It seems like he's the one who's rising out of that blur of Zach Eflin's, Jared Eichhoff, Vince Velasquez, Jake Thompson, Ben Lively, like all those guys that thought that we thought maybe, you know, maybe, why not? Just give them a shot. And then, of course, there's Eniel De Los Santos. Yeah, Ranger Suarez is on the depth chart. Like, you know, there's a long list of names that can fill out those last three spots. So, on the one hand, Jake Arrieta looked so ineffective for certain months out of the year last year that you do think that, okay, as a veteran, as a guy who was hurt for part of that and contributed to his bad numbers, there is a bounce back here that could be very possible. Like some guys last year were just so ineffective that it couldn't have all been their fault. And Arrieta, I think in some cases, was one of them. So I think a bounce back isn't out of the question. At the same time, that doesn't eliminate the possibility of the Phillies looking for more starting pitching moving forward. In fact, the more I'm talking about it, the more I'm thinking that's probably an area where if they're as good as we are hoping they're going to be, that's an area where they're looking to improve as the trade deadline comes around. Maybe before, you know, the off season is over, if the free agent market is still to be mined. So yeah, I think both things could be true, that Jake Arrieta bounces back, but they still need to find somebody else to stabilize the rotation, because once again, we're entering another season where it's, you know, Aaron Nola at the top and then question marks behind him.
No, that's a good point. And I do think Jake Arrieta has a chance to bounce back this year. But as a guy who's getting older and a guy who doesn't strike guys out as much, again, he did increase his strikeouts dramatically, especially in September, but it did not result in better things for him. And I think Arrieta was a guy who we remember last year was often upset at defensive shifting behind him. The Phillies have said that they're going to tweak how they look at that and maybe use more of a larger sample size for their opponents to reconfigure some of their defensive shifting. But we also know that a lot of Phillies pitchers were just generally uncomfortable with the defensive shifts behind them and pitched differently when the defense was shifted, and trying to pitch in a way that defeated the purpose of the shift. And so we know that happened with Nick Pivetta. We heard Chris Young, Phillies pitching coach, talking about that. And Jake Arrieta, I think, is a guy who did that too, because when he was with the Cubs, for as analytically based as they are, they're not a team that shifts a whole lot with their defense. So it will be interesting to see whether or not Arrieta can adjust to that and whether or not the Phillies use as many shifts this year as they did last year. I think they will, but I do think hopefully they've tweaked their formula a little bit to make them more effective, and that will also hopefully play into a better season. Again, Justin, though, you're right. It's one spring training start, but to me, it was really encouraging to see he was throwing 94 miles an hour this early in spring before he's fully ramped up, and I think that's a good sign moving forward here in 2019. Hopefully he can stay healthy throughout the spring. Also, remember last year, he signed late and didn't start the season until a couple weeks into it, and who knows what kind of an effect that had on him last season. Any final thoughts, Justin, from you here as we wrap up episode number 264?
So about a year and a half ago, I did a story on Campbell's Field for the Good Fight and about how it was scheduled to be demolished. Campbell's Field, where the Camden River Sharks played right across the river, right over the Ben Franklin Bridge. A very scenic stadium that just didn't draw very much, and it has since been demolished. And I'm just working on a story right now on the Hardball Times, which is a spiritual sequel to that one, about the South Jersey Baseball Hall of Fame and how it was located in Campbell's Field and sort of found out, sort of in a hurry, that they were going to have to scramble to move all of these South Jersey baseball treasures out of Campbell's Field and find a new facility, which they found one. But there's it's an interesting story just about regional baseball and the importance of history, and also very loudly ticking clocks.
Yikes! Oh man. Well, I'm glad they got everything out of there, and we'll be looking forward to seeing that story at the Hardball Times. Liz, any final thoughts from you? Anything you're working on, or any last little nuggets rolling through your head before we wrap up?
When during Harper's press conference, he talked about Rhys Hoskins and that he got to get to know him during the Home Run Derby, and they stayed in contact. And I would like to say that during the entire Home Run Derby, I watched them because I wanted Rhys Hoskins to make friends. It was his first time.
That's adorable. Like,
It was his first time like communing in that atmosphere with you know other baseball players. You know, they weren't playing each other; they were there together to play together. And he got to know Bryce Harper, and it obviously had something to do with him coming here because they remained friends. They were commenting on each other's Instagram posts. They talked about Philadelphia. I just want to say it made me feel very good that that had something to do with it, and that Rhys Hoskins made the most important friend. He made the most important friend he possibly could have.
Rhys, good job, buddy. And that'll do it for episode number 264 of Hittin' Season. Again, my thanks to Justin and Liz for coming on the podcast once again, as they do every Sunday night. And folks, don't forget to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. You'll get Hittin' Season, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning every time we have a new show uploaded. So again, subscribe, rate, and review the Good Fight podcast feed also, if you would. And don't forget to check out our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.